Hey, welcome to episode 6 of the Going Deeper podcast. My name is Robbie and I am your host today. And joining me is JD Lyle.
Hello.
And Jeff Lyle.
Good morning.
Hey, and we are so excited that you would join us today to go a little deeper as we talk about this past weekend's message here at Good News Gathering. And whether you're joining us, maybe you're driving, maybe you're running. I'm sorry if that's what you're doing. And maybe you're at work, whatever, wherever you are right now. We just hope that what we say today and what we talk about would be helpful to you. And that's really our goal. And so many of you have given us feedback about that. And we're so grateful for that. So I'm dealing with a little bit of a cold and I feel like I'm quarantined from the rest of the staff. So there's actually a divider even now between me and the rest of the room. And so I'm trying not to.
The great chasm.
Yeah, the great chasm. Yes. Yeah, my cough rather than sin has separated me.
It's been fixed.
Yes. Yes. There it is. All right. So, hey, Jeff, this past weekend, we are now, a couple weeks into our generosity series, and it's always a tough series to talk about, especially, I think, as Americans, even we have this view of money that it's my money, I made it, I did it, and we forget. Now, if I'm out of money, well, then that's, you know, that's God's problem, but if I earned a lot of money, well, then that's because of me, and we need a change of perspective on this. And this past weekend, you talked about Jesus. I mean, I guess we can kind of call it a parable. It's an interesting story that he tells about a rich man and a poor man named Lazarus. And so with that, is there anything in particular, I guess I'll ask you two questions. One, anything that stands out specifically in your study about that story? And then two, anything that you wish you could have hit on?
Well, I think the first thing, when you look at that story, one of the fascinating aspects of that story is that great reversal, what scholars call it. And it's that idea that everything that appears important in this life gets turned on its head. And when both of them die, everything changes. And so as you look at that story initially, you think the rich man has it all. And in reality, he has nothing. And you think the poor man has nothing. And in reality, he has what matters most. And I think that's why Jesus chose to name that particular character. Of all the characters in all the parables, none of them are named, but this one. And that God is my help is really what that name Lazarus means. And so that was the center of this man's life. And so he had it all.
Yeah, and I think we need to pay attention. Jesus particularly did not waste words, and that if it was important enough to be recorded, because John tells us in his gospel that there were more things that Jesus did that would fill all the books in the world, which, you know, may have been three at that point, but there was a lot, you know, of books during that time of what he had done. And so the selections that these writers chose are significant, and that if Jesus names a character, then we need to pay attention to what he's doing and what those original hearers would have thought. And it's really easy, I think, that we jump into it like, oh, what does this mean to me? No. First off, what did it mean to the original hearers? And then how does that apply to me is the great way to do that and really get the proper interpretation. And I think this is the upside down kingdom, as we can talk about, that Jesus comes and flips everything on its head. And JD, this is kind of off script, but I'm just thinking about like your trips to Haiti and things like that, of what you've witnessed there, maybe of that upside down kingdom where the poor, I don't know if you can think of
can be some of the greatest instructors to you in a lot of ways. Just the one of the things that it's typical, being now on my sixth trip, this January I went on my sixth trip, having been several times, and every time I go, there's always somebody new with us. There's always somebody on their first trip, and you watch them be struck by the gratitude and the humility and the thankfulness that the people in Haiti express for even the littlest kindnesses, and the way that they will share with one another from what they're benefited with, from whether it's us or you know, they sell and make money, or you know, get food or whatever, and you see them sharing those kinds of things. There's a tendency for those of us with means to approach life from the standpoint of lack, and for those individuals who spend most of their lives lacking the things that we take for granted, when they actually experience them, there's a great gratitude and there's a great thankfulness to God. And it's funny to watch first time people get exposed to that level of gratitude in poverty. and it's very instructive to us. Every year, you know, when you're talking to those people that go for the first time, there's this sense of, oh my goodness, these people have nothing when you compare it to what I have back home. The things that I take for granted, the stuff that is just sitting in my house that I almost never use, or the things that, you know, the bank account that says that I could live like they live for the next 200 years, you know? Like, I mean, and the challenge that presents to our heart and mind, to be reminded that truly God has to be the one we trust in, not our finances, because at any moment it could go away. And to take everything as a blessing from God is a critical lesson that comes to people during those trips. And it's a critical reminder that I get every time I go. I remember my mom coming back from her first trip in Haiti, because the very, very first trip that GNG ever sent was just a very small team of leadership team members. And I remember her coming back and telling me the story that she went to Walmart for the first time after she was down there, and it just made her burst into tears because of wall-to-wall stuff. And she just spent a week with people who will never experience anything like that. And I think she was made grateful but very much humbled by that sense that we need a lot less than we think we do, and yet how blessed we are so that we can be generous.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being 16 and going on a mission trip to Piedras Negras, Mexico, and we had an opportunity to stay the night with a family there in their shack, dirt floor, tin roof, and they lived in the middle of a dump. And this guy apparently was like the local convenience store, because he had glass bottles of Coke that, you know, people could come up the window, and he just operated out of his house, and they offered us a Coke because it was like, don't drink the water, you know, but you can have something that's been bottled. And I just remember being there with another guy who was from a different group that had come in, and we went together, and how much that just radically changed a night there sleeping, you know, on this mat on a dirt floor, you know, in the middle of a Mexican dump in the northern Mexican desert. It just changes you to realize just how blessed we are. And we can lose perspective of that pretty quick, you know.
And, you know, one of the things I've noticed is when I first went to Haiti in 2009, I would look at these kids, and some of these kids I've had a relationship with since then. But when I first went down, I would look at these kids and I would think, man, I'd like to get them in my suitcase and take them home so they can have what I have. And the longer I've been going down there, the less I feel that way. Because I think the better perspective you have on what having can do to you, the more you look at them at times and say, they may have it better than we do. In terms of their dependence upon God, their reliance upon Him, and their realization that stuff is not the ultimate thing. Yeah. You know, the more we accumulate, the more it eats into our soul, I think. And what was that story of one of the folks that came up with Pastor Pierre?
Yeah, so Pastor Pierre told a story once. Because there for a while, he would come here every like October, November, and he would do a swing through all of the churches that support him. And I remember him telling a story one time about one of his trips to Pittsburgh. He took a friend of his to one of the churches in Pittsburgh. And one of the members of the congregation there walked up to this friend of Pastor Pierre's, and I think in kind of a well-meaning, you know, just kind of, I think the guy was trying to be nice, but he said something to the effect of, you know, I'm sure you enjoy being here, you know, and getting to like come hang out, and you know, like people take care of you and, you know, serve you, and you get the chance to eat good food and, you know, spend time with people and all that kind of stuff. And he made this comment to Pastor Pierre's friend, and Pastor Pierre told the story that his friend looked back at the guy and very kindly and humbly replied, "I can't wait to get home because I don't have to trust God when I'm here." And that was really I remember that story. Like, I mean, I remember him sitting there telling that story, and it impacted me greatly because it was like how easy it is for possessions and stuff and wealth and things to be that which separates us from actually putting our security in Jesus. Because I don't have to worry about whether or not I'm going to get fed the rest of the day. Yeah. I don't even have to think about it. I don't have to pray about it. I don't have to ask God to Lord, if you could make sure that I have enough food in the house tonight. Like, I don't have to have that worry. And so it's very easy to begin to approach your life from the standpoint of, my security is found in the money that I make and in the wealth that I build, because ultimately I can take care of myself. And the Haitian realization to some way in some way, shape, or form is, you literally have no control over your life. You have no control about whether or not you're capable of continuing to build wealth. You have no control over whether or not you're going to be breathing in an hour. And for them, their lack of stuff is often that reminder and that encouragement to continually be placing their faith and their hope and their security in Christ, because they recognize it is the only thing they actually have.
Well, you think how fascinating it is that in the Lord's Prayer, he said, "Give us this day our daily bread." I mean, it was one day at a time. It wasn't, "Oh, I've got enough food in the fridge for a month." It's a daily dependence.
Yeah, and I think that makes me think of Jesus in Matthew 6, where he says, "You cannot serve both God and money." And actually, there it's the word mammon, which is more like the spirit of greed. In that money isn't the problem. Obviously, we need some, we probably don't need as much as we think we do, but it's that idea, you will love one and hate the other. And that idea of, I don't need to trust in God when I'm here. And so I think when we think about that, Jeff, you kind of talked about that generosity or giving breaks that power of possessions over me, and that things really do. I mean, I guess if we're taking Jesus' teaching seriously, you can't serve both God and money, that means that something is going to have power over me as a master. I guess, what are some steps, if I don't know if either one of you guys can think of some, like, giving that breaks that power of possession, if I'm dealing with that and struggling with, man, I like my stuff, I like my comfort. Is there a step you might think that somebody could take to begin?
Well, I think one of the ways that we can begin to think in terms of, I don't know if maybe the right word is downsizing, but we do this twice a year with our free sales, because we ask our people, go through your house, ask yourself, what do I really need? And if there are things there that you don't really need or you're not using. I remember when we moved a number of years ago, we actually, you know, you got to get everything out of your house because you're moving. And I went through closets, and there were things in those closets that I had not touched in a decade. And I thought to myself, how silly is it for me to have this? It's benefiting me not one bit, and it's benefiting nobody else. Why do I have this? I think one of a telling feature in American society is the existence of storage units. Why do we have those? No, I mean, those don't exist, I don't think, in at least in the kind of propensity we have here, anywhere else in the world. But they're everywhere here. And why do we have that? So we can put stuff in a place, lock it up, and not see it for months at a time. What's the point?
Yeah. You know, one thing, Dad mentioned the free sale. For me, it's I've grown up in church, you know, and I grew up with parents that taught me how to, you know, that giving is important. And so for me, ever since I grew up, you had an understanding that you were supposed to give. And so that for me is not necessarily a horribly painful thing to do, because I've really been trained my whole life that you give and that's just what you do. And some of your paycheck is not yours. It needs to go back, to God and to the church and to the service of his kingdom and the world and all that kind of stuff. And so that particularly has not always has been as difficult for me as when I feel sometimes like God is calling me to give away something that I like. And so when the free sale comes around, it's almost inevitable that every year there will be that moment where I'm digging through all the stuff that I'm going to give to the free sale, or working my way through my clothes, that there will be an item of clothing that I have no intention of giving away, and all of a sudden there's that feeling, that sense, or that thought, whatever you want to call it, prompting from the Spirit to go, put that in the bag. But I don't want to put that in the bag. You know, and I can't tell you how many times, and sometimes I've listened to that voice, and sometimes I've not listened to that voice. But the truth is, He does confront us with these moments, and oftentimes it becomes very easy for us to stump that voice. And when you do, it's amazing. You forget. I mean, to me, like in me, I've had this experience where that was kind of like a, oh, okay, fine, I'll give away this t-shirt that I really like, or I'll put this jacket that I really care, you know, that I really enjoy wearing in there, or I'll do the. And then you almost forget you had it. You know, you just, like, it's gone. You don't think about it anymore. You don't question it anymore. I remember at one point I had a young guy. He was working his way through high school, and his family situation was pretty tough. I was single at the time, and I had an open room at my house, and the guy came to live with me, and I felt prompted by God to just like help him out and provide a place for him. It was usually like a day or so a week before church, because he was getting involved in service here and stuff. And on several occasions, I felt led to give him something or whatever. And then when I did, it was just like not a big deal. And it's in those moments where we obey the Spirit's prompting to like get rid of something or to give away something or to help somebody in a particular way, and we just do it, that it breaks that power, that thing or you know, that selfishness and greed that's so easy for us.
Yeah, the temptation for more.
Yep.
So let's talk about that, because specifically, this can look like, If giving, I think you said it was a moral duty, right? This idea that I have to give, it's a moral obligation for me to give as a follower of Christ. So do I have to give a dollar to every person that asks me, every homeless, you know, guy that hits me up, everybody with a street sign that says, you know, homeless, needs help? What's my obligation for that? Is it, as you put it, the hand up or the hand out? What would you kind of say? What is my moral obligation to that?
I think that kind of giving really requires us to exercise what I would call discernment. I think we do have an obligation to the person who's asking, not to enable bad behavior or poor choices. And some of this, I understand that good Christian people can disagree on this particular issue. And I understand that maybe my viewpoint on this has been a little bit jaded by 35 years of law practice. I've represented plenty of con men, and I've represented my share of addicts. And I've had people ask me, I've had people I knew come up and ask me, you know, hey, can you give me $40? Well, and of course, you know, the response to why was, well, I've got an electric bill. Well, I knew it was never going to go to an electric bill. It's going to go right up their nose. And so, you know, I to be honest with you personally, I rarely give cash to anybody. Now, if I receive a prompting, okay. But I really try to be very discerning on those issues, because I think you can get in a position where you're not helping, you're hurting. And I think we have to be very careful about that. You know, you think about what you see in the book of Acts. In Acts 6, the church is trying to deal with a situation where they have widows in their congregation. And they're trying to take care of these widows, because in that culture, to be a widow, to be somebody who was basically abandoned without resource, was a very, very difficult position to be in. And so the church really helps the widows out. And that's a great thing. But then in the book of 1 Timothy, chapter 5, you see where Paul is giving instructions to a young pastor. And he's saying, hey, if you have widows in your church, their families, if they have families, are first responsible for them. They shouldn't be relying on the church if they have families. And he goes on to say at one point in that particular chapter that anyone that won't care for their own family is worse than an unbeliever. And so I think we do have to be discerning about those kinds of issues. And that's not always easy. But when we work with Pastor Pierre, one of the things that he really advised us to do before we come to Haiti is to read a book called When Helping Hurts. And it's that idea that sometimes our, what we think of as charity or generosity, can be problematic for the recipient if we're not wise about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, I think my perspective on this is somewhat the same, some of it a little different, just having worked with addicts, who some of these guys that I worked with were making more money panhandling than I did with my job, right? And so we're trying to encourage them, like, go get a job and make an honest living. And they're like, why? I can stand on the street with my sign and, you know, pull down $100 or more a day, you know, and then, yeah, I got to sleep under a bridge, but whatever, at least I have my freedom. And I think, you know, it was always when we had a very nice, like 5-acre, the rescue mission there in Orange County, you know, as you would think, Orange County is very nice and posh. And, you know, a couple blocks down would be some guy holding a sign, need help, homeless, need food. And I'm just like, it's 3 blocks up, dude. You know, like, you can't tell me you don't know it's there. You know it's there. And that's what I would ask the guys who, you know, obviously I'm becoming friends with and discipling them. Do they know that's there? Oh, they know it's there. They just don't want to live by the rules that they have to, you know, get better. And then you go, so if I hand this guy $5, what am I really doing at this point? And again, I think, Jeff, you kind of put it, it's a state of your heart that you're like, no, you're going to use that for drugs and alcohol. Well, that's discriminatory on your heart. That may or may not be it, but I think there's an idea of, hey, I'm hungry. Well, then let me go buy you food, right? Hey, I need a coat. Then let me go buy you a coat. Like, we're going to actually meet the need with what was asked, not just random. Now, if somebody, you know, I'm going to admit, if I have a buck, somebody asks for something, I'm going to help them out. I've done that before. I'll probably continue to do that, but it's not going to be some large sum of cash, you know, to make that happen. But I don't feel like, you know, if somebody's just standing around with a sign, okay, I may not interact with them. Somebody asks me, that's a different thing. And then I have to gauge my heart where it is. You know, you see people in the parking lot hitting person after person after person. That's a hard spot. And you really do, I think you do have to be discerning about that, but to not be cold to think, oh, they're definitely going to use it for drugs. They're definitely going to use it for alcohol, you know, and our own problem with We're afraid of homeless people. We're afraid of, you know, and some of them really are just down on their luck. Now, others are dangerous, but, you know, having lived with some of them, you know, some of them are just good people that are just really down on their luck.
You know, I think the statement you made about meeting the need is really important, because what is it that they actually need? Sometimes the request itself is enough of a gauge for what it is that they're in need of. So for instance, people will often ask for money because it's kind of an easy thing to ask for, right? It's, you know, it's a whole lot different to say, hey, can I have $15 for food, than to walk up to somebody you don't know and say, hey, will you take me out to lunch because I'm really hungry? You know, there's a demand that people feel uncomfortable. They might feel comfortable asking you for money, but they don't expect, nor are they necessarily willing to ask for you to spend X amount of time with them. And to some degree or another, I think it's important for us to take a look at what they're really asking for, what it is that they need, they truly need, and are they willing to let you spend time with them? Are they willing to let you actually have a conversation with them? Are they willing to let you walk across the street and buy them a meal, or go down to the gas station with them and pump their gas, or go to the electric company and pay a little bit of their bill for them, that kind of thing? Are they actually willing to do that, or is there a disengagement?
Yeah, you can gauge the need real quick.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because if they're willing to let you accompany them, it's almost an invitation into their life in that moment. And if they're willing to let you do that to some degree or another, I think we as Christian people who should have a great deal of compassion for those who don't have what we have, because we recognize that nothing that we have is actually ours. And came from just our, you know, great personal awesomeness. You know, it's all blessings from God from the top down. We should be open to blessing people who are willing to actually let us come into their lives and meet a real need. If all they want is our money, I think it's wholly acceptable to be skeptical about that. And to say, you know what, I'm not going to give you money, but if you'll be willing to let me step into your life, even if it's only for the next 10 minutes while we walk over to McDonald's and I buy you some food and talk to you and learn your name and, you know, just learn a little bit about you and why you're in the situation that you're in and try to just be encouraging, man, that's a whole different deal.
Yeah. Well, and you bring up an interesting point there, because there is a, there's a part of that that we have to allow ourselves to be inconvenienced by God is doing in that point.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I think about Acts 3, where Peter and John are walking up the temple to pray, and there's a beggar there, and, you know, he calls out to them, and what it was Peter, right? He's like, look at me, you know, and he's like, it says he's expecting to receive something, and the thing that comes out of Peter's mouth is, silver and gold I do not have. And I'm just thinking the beggar's like, oh, man, you know, like,
bummer.
Like, really? This is the Christian, like, you know, giving a tract instead of a tip, you know? It's just like, oh, so I don't have a tip money, but I do have a Christian tract. Here you go. And it looks like a $100 bill.
Yeah, don't, you know, do that.
This is, oh, this is not what we're talking about. No. This is, you know, and so I think that idea of that I'm going to be inconvenienced by what Jesus is doing in the moment, that perhaps this guy, this woman, is God calling me to empty myself for a second, for a minute. And I think I was in Australia, like, gosh, 11 years ago now. And me and a friend, we were walking along downtown Brisbane, and this guy just comes up out of nowhere. His name was Lee. I'll never forget it. And he was a homeless guy, and he smelled like he was homeless, and he had a backpack and just wearing flannel. I mean, he looked like a 90s grunge rocker. You know, it was weird. And so, and he's like, you know, hi, do you guys care if I hang out with you? And then we're like, and I had an umbrella with me, and I was like, this umbrella is going to fast become a weapon. You know, like, I'm just like, I'm ready, you know? And he ended up being the coolest homeless guy, and we hung out with him the whole night. And we had told him where we were working at this this place called CareWorks. It was to help immigrants and homeless people and things like that. It was a coffee shop, internet cafe. And the next day, I'm sitting at a computer right by the window, and I hear this bang, I, and I look at him, and here's Lee right there. He had like jumped trains to come like an hour away to get to us, and he like fell asleep on the couch across the room. And I remember just thinking at that time, like, wow, God, like, here's a relationship where this guy's now going to get the care that he needed because I took the time the night before to have a relationship with him.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're absolutely right. Is that willingness to have your course corrected by God? You never know when it's going to happen. You never know when you're going to come across a person. You never know when you're going to get that phone call, you know, from that person in your life that's in a tough situation. And are you willing to stop and listen to the Holy Spirit for just a minute to be directed on what you should do and how you should respond to that? I do think it's really important. And sometimes the Holy Spirit will throw up the like giant red flag, like, no.
You're talking like the opposite way.
Yeah, the opposite way. Like, it's like, no, this is not the kind of thing you want to get involved in. And you know, that's okay. That is okay. Because you know, who knows what's motivating people? And you've got to pay attention to what the Spirit's prompting you to do. But at the same time, you know, it's in those situations, I think, where you have a Lee walk up to you and he's like, hey, I'll let you hang out with me if you'll let me hang out with you. And all of a sudden you've got this moment where God can really work through you.
And that's not even what was going through my head. I mean, honestly, I'm holding the umbrella until I'm like realizing like,
he's not going to jump me.
Yeah. Like what is going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. A healthy suspicion of what's happening. And I think, you know, especially it's working at
wisdom.
The rescue
mission. It's called wisdom.
Yeah. Wisdom. Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. But I think, you know, working at the rescue mission and working with these guys who really wanted help, it really changed that perspective. You know, and it was interesting because I'd be with some of those guys. A guy would come up to us at a gas station and would say, you know, like, hey, you know, I need money. And I remember looking at one guy, his name was Josh. He looked at me. He's like, nope. Starts shaking his head. Nope, nope, nope. And I'm like, what? Oh, and it's like all of a sudden these guys were acting, you know, as my wisdom at that point going, nope, don't give it to him. But then the other times like, yeah, that guy, he really needed help. And they could just tell. And they, you know, but I remember one guy at a gas station asking me there. And he had a memorized speech, and he was just like monotone. Hello, my name is John, and I need help because I am, you know, like, it was just like, what is going on? It was so bizarre. We're going to be confronted with that. We have to make sure that we're spending time in God's word. We have to be sure we're spending time in prayer, learning to listen to God, because in those moments, I don't have time to be like, let me go consult God's word on what I should do. There's going to be in your heart in those moments, the voice of God speaking to you of what you should do, and you will know in those times.
Well, you know, sometimes it's those simple moments where God presents you with an opportunity just to do something kind. My wife called me the other day because there was a friend in her life that had just made a quick call to her and said, hey, would you mind, I have this X, Y, and Z going on and I can't do it right now. Would you mind taking my car to the shop because I need to get a new tire? And my tire's flat. It's going flat. Would you mind getting it over to the shop? I'll come pick you up and then I'll pay for it and everything. Not asking for anything other than just that moment of kindness. And then my wife calls me and goes, hey, I know this person and I know enough to know that it probably wouldn't hurt if we just paid for the fix that they need. And I said, okay, if you think that's what the Spirit's telling you, then do it. And she did. And it was like, it's just one of those things where if you're listening and you're paying attention, sometimes God will bring people into your life that aren't even asking you for that. you know, but you recognize in that moment the potential to meet a need. And if you do it, I mean, there's a moment of blessing. And for that person, you know, they kind of confronted my wife. Why did you do that? Like, I you know, I'm going to pay you back. And she was like, no, that was not the point. Like, and she was just like, this is a God thing. And I'm just going to ask you to like accept it. And that those are cool situations, when they come up. And so, sometimes for us, if we can meet a need, God will also challenge us to meet another one in the process. And we just have to be willing to be open to that.
Yeah. And again, I think it just comes down to your heart and where that is. Again, that if you understand what you have, I think JD, you said that earlier, if you understand all that you have is God's anyways, well, that change of perspective changes everything. And so again, if I can't serve God and money, again, not the problem isn't money, it's the attitude towards it, that you have the, we call him the rich young ruler, whoever he was, you know, Jesus tells him to give away everything. It's interesting. We don't see any other recordings of him telling him to give everything away except that guy. And he says he went away sad because he had great wealth or great possessions, you know, and it was that idea that was actually stopping him from following after Jesus. He could keep all the laws, which is kind of an arrogant statement anyways, but he could keep everything, but that was what was going to stop him. And it will be the thing that you hold on to that's instead of Jesus that will keep you from Jesus. It could be anything, but it will be that thing that will keep you from Jesus. So just again, I do think, just to recap, it is our Christian duty to give, but it is also our duty to be diligent and discerning about how and where and when we do that and give. Guys, I just want to change direction real quick. We do have a question this week, and we have a mom who says, excuse me, I'll try to read this. My 10-year-old asked, wants to know why God put the tree in the garden when God knows everything and God knew, as underlined, they would fail. I told him it was because God wanted us to choose to love him, but he still doesn't understand. And I was wondering if there was anything else. That's all I kind of say. Yeah, I see on that. Is there anything else? So why would God, that's a great question, actually. I love that a 10-year-old asking that, because those are questions that theologians ask themselves all the time.
This kid's ahead of his age.
Yeah, somebody has written 600 pages on this, I'm sure. Why would God, being all-knowing, decide to put a tree in the middle of the garden and say, you can eat of everything, but you can't eat of this tree, knowing everything and knowing they would fail? Why did he set them up for failure, supposedly, as we're looking at this? Or did he? Maybe he didn't set them up for failure. What was it?
Well, I think if there's one thing you get out of the creation story, it's that God is a tremendous respecter of freedom. And you know, the Bible tells us that God is a God of love. Well, love can only really occur in a context of freedom. You can't be in a love relationship with another person if you're forced.
It's called slavery.
Yeah. And it's an unloving situation if force is involved. And so at some level, in order to create human beings, beings with freedom, there had to be some choice that they could make. And that choice really breaks down to, I'm either going to choose God or not God. It's really that simple. And so that tree represents that choice. And they had to have it, or true freedom could not exist and true love could not exist.
You know, one thing that I think is important to kind of remember is that this tree was not some crazy magic thing where they eat this fruit and now all of a sudden there's some, like, I mean, it's a tree with fruit. What's the real point? I mean, the real point is that in every situation, people have a decision to make about what is good and right and the best thing to do. And the Bible presents a picture, especially early in Genesis, that God created a world and he said, this is what is good. All right, the world that I made, the people that I made, the situation that I made, and the relationship that he had with us. He says, all of that is good. And that tree, simply put, is our ability to define good for ourselves versus allowing God to define good for us. And when I came across that way of looking at it, it really helped me because in every situation we have that choice. Am I going to listen to what God calls good? Am I going to define my life based on what God calls good? Am I going to align myself with what God calls good? Or am I going to say, you know what I think is good, and I'm going to do what I think is good, regardless of whether or not God says it is good. And so in that moment, approaching the tree, that choice was there for them. Do I love God and accept his definition of everything that he calls good, or do I make a definition of good for myself? And when we do that, and you can look at it happen in our culture right now, when we make the decision for what we think is good, completely devoid of whether or not it is something that God has called good, the breakdown of relationships, the breakdown of society, the breakdown even of the mental and emotional health of the individual is evident when we choose to accept our own definitions of good and evil, as opposed to looking at what God says is good and evil. And so for me, that tree is really the I mean, I believe it was a real tree and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not using the word representative to mean I just think it's fable, but like it's representative of that choice that we get to make on a daily basis. Is it God's definition of good that matters or my definition of good that matters?
Yeah, because if we decide what's right or wrong, we're basically putting ourselves in God's shoes. We're making ourselves
absolutely
right, which is honestly the way I've always kind of read it. Satan comes and says, you know, you will not surely die. God knows that you will be like him. And it's interesting because he all of a sudden makes it sound like a really noble act that you'll be like God.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like, well, that sounds good. Like, I'll be like God. I can go and do that. And he leaves off the bad part that you're actually disobeying God in that. And I know, John Piper talks about that, this idea that God has given these pleasures. And it's this idea that will we be happy in the pleasures that God has given us, or will we find displeasure in the one thing that we can't have in that moment?
Well, in the one thing that they couldn't have really was getting to be God. I mean, that tree was really all about, do you think you're God, or do you accept me as God? I've created all this. I've made it. I've put it all together. I was the brain behind everything, and it works perfectly. I mean, this planet is aligned in exactly the right place to not freeze or burn up. This, you know, all of the factors.
You mean that wasn't millions of years?
I mean,
it's weird. It's all chance.
You think about science. I mean, some of the science that's being done, and believe me, I'm by no means like I'm no Stephen Hawking or those kind of guys, but the science that's coming out about all of the absolutely necessary factors for life to exist on this planet and for things to work out the way that they did and for us to even be here. I mean, we are in a God-created world that was hung perfectly in space for us to be here. And so the only thing that tree was there for was to test our ability to accept God as God or to put ourselves in that place. And there is a fabric, or there is a hole that gets ripped in the fabric of the universe when created things want to be the creator.
Yeah.
When the definer of good and evil at the very beginning we knock him off that throne and we determine that we are going to be the definer of good and evil in a context that we had nothing to do with the creation of. It creates a tough situation for us.
It doesn't really bother me that it's like this test, right? God knew they were going to fail and he set up a test and he knew they were going to fail. That doesn't really bother me because the reality is Genesis 3, you already see Jesus in play. He has already set up a plan from the creation of the world that there was going to be this great rescue of man, that we could be with him more than just a garden, more than just walking in the cool of the day or what, you know. It was this internal indwelling Holy Spirit. I mean, it is actually a greater picture than even the garden of where we are now, of the power that we have access to. And so this, he knew that we were going to fail. Yeah, but he also knew that we were going to need a savior. And so when we see Jesus from Genesis 3, man, that to me takes away, that wasn't God setting me up to fail. It was setting him up to win over and over and over again.
I think one important thing we can take away from that story is that idea that every day, every one of us stands at that same tree. We have a choice. And we can either choose God or not God, or maybe another way to put it is God or I'm God. Yeah. And so all of us stand at that tree, not just Adam and Eve, every one of us.
No, it's a great point. So let me just say to the person who wrote this question, Mom, good job. That's a difficult question, obviously. I don't even know if we did a great job handling that. excuse me, because I probably would have answered it the same way. And it seems like I think we're probably in agreement that you did a good job with that. And so we will email you and let you know we answered that. But if you have other questions, this is great for us to sit in dialogue. But we'd love to do a whole episode that was just questions. If you guys have them and want to send them in to us at info@goodnewsgathering.org, that would be great. As we wrap up here, we have a couple opportunities for you to go deeper here. And we have a class series that happens. And right now we're in, is this considered spring? Is this like our spring session or is this winter session? Mm-hmm. I'm in like spring semester school, winter session of classes. It's all right. So, excuse me. This Sunday is class 201. And JD, would you mind speaking a little bit to like what they would learn and why they should show up to something like that?
Yes. So in class 201, you're going to learn a little bit more about the spiritual disciplines necessary for growth in your relationship with Christ, because it's one thing to have a moment where you accept, you know, Jesus as your savior and you know, maybe you get baptized in that moment or whatever. But then what do you do now? Like, how do you live now? How do you actually grow and develop and deepen that relationship? And over the course of Christian history, there have been a number of spiritual disciplines that have effectively been proven to help you take your relationship with Jesus into more and more realms of your life and deeper into your life. And so, so in that class, you'll learn a lot about those spiritual disciplines that'll help you grow.
Yeah. And so if you've been sitting around like, oh, okay, I've been saved. Now what? That's the perfect opportunity. If you're saying, man, I just want to go deeper, I just need more. This is that. Don't say we don't provide something like that. Like this is it, of what you should do. And so, right after second service for that, and there's no cost to that class, but do, you know, call the church office and sign up. And we offer that, what, 4 times a year? So if you miss this one, you can get it at a different time. You don't have to take them in order. It's just really good to dig into those things and see where God's taking you. The other opportunity we have for you to go deeper, and this is about leadership. And we have our prep series coming up, and prep one is coming up February 24th, Saturday, February 24th from 9 to 4 PM. And this class has been completely revamped. So if you've taken it before, we ask that you take it again, because it's going to challenge you on what it means to be a leader. Jeff, can you talk a little bit about what they might be learning and why they should come to something like that?
Well, you know, as the church grows and God in his infinite wisdom has chosen to bless us with growth at this time. And that what that growth necessitates is it necessitates our leaders becoming more adept at leadership, and also it necessitates an expansion of our volunteer base, because we want to be able to serve well the people that God brings to us. And so Prep One is really designed to help our leaders and our volunteers grow in their service, and to give us a common language about how we lead and what it means to lead here at Good News.
Yeah, and that's important. As we get bigger, we actually have to become more specialized in what we're doing, meaning individuals will be giving themselves to a particular ministry and owning it is really what we need to do, because we can't hire 1,000 staff army to make it happen. And so part of the reason we're able to be so effective at what we do is because our resources are not tied up in a large staff, which means we need equipped and empowered volunteers to do the work that normally maybe churches would hire a staff to do. And our job as a staff is to equip and empower you. And so, February 24th, Saturday, February 24th from 9 to 4 p.m., there is a cost to that. What's $10, but that covers breakfast and lunch. And the curriculum for it. So you'll get a book through that. So again, you can call the church office. You can email us again, info@goodnewsgathering.org. Or if you're here, for service, you can sign up in the atrium. There's a table set up for that. Hey, we know we've gone just a little bit longer than maybe normal, but we are so grateful you would join us, and hopefully this has been helpful for your life, that you can go deeper, in your real walk with Christ. And so again, we would love to hear your questions, love to hear your feedback, anything we can do to help you walk with Christ better. And so until next time, have a great week.
Take care, guys.
Hey, it's been fun.